Plant-based meals may not be mainstream yet, but they're catching on. Welcome to Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. I'm Salwa Khan. Two large food service companies are pledging to provide plant-based meals, in fact, up to 50% of entrees, to restaurants in many national parks in the U.S., as well as to K-12 schools. Mercy for Animals is an international nonprofit organization whose mission is to end factory farming by constructing a more just and sustainable food system. To that end, they're working with organizations that provide meals to the public, like restaurants and food service companies. I spoke with Jennifer Baer, Director of Plant-Based Initiatives at Mercy for Animals, about her work.
I work to oversee our efforts with both public and private institutions to promote plant-based procurement strategies that are really aimed at removing animals from the food system and normalizing plant-based food choices. So we work with restaurants, corporate food service institutions, as well as within the public sector to normalize plant-based eating. So that could include, you know, companies that provide food service to schools, K-12 schools, higher education, as well as hospital systems, but also commercial restaurants. So, fast casual chains, fast food companies, restaurants all across the country, even coffee shops. We're really looking for opportunities where we can collaborate with these institutions to promote plant-based eating. Really at the center of our mission, it's all about being kinder to the animals as well as the planet. And that's really why we're so focused on plant-based eating specifically.
So you advocate for a diet that's based on plants. At one time, did you eat an animal-based diet? And if so, was your move away from that a kind of a gradual process? How did that take place?
Many people who, are now vegan or vegetarian, I started out my life eating meat and dairy, really just the standard American diet is, I guess, what you would call it. For much of my childhood and into my early adulthood, it wasn't until I was in college doing my undergraduate degree, I was taking a course in public health, and I had a wonderful professor who happened to show us the documentary Forks Over Knives, which I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a really powerful documentary that looks at the health implications of consuming meat and dairy. And that was really the first time that I took a step back and was, sort of like, okay, I'm being presented with this information about how eating, a larger proportion of plant-based foods in your diet can be beneficial for your health. And I decided to do a little bit more of my own research, just sort of on my laptop in my dorm room, Googling plant-based diet, vegan diet, et cetera. And one of the first few resources that I found were from animal advocacy groups like Mercy for Animals, funny enough, because now I have, gone on to work here for several years now. But at the time, I was really really taken aback, I think, and troubled and disturbed by some of the undercover investigation footage that I saw organizations like Mercy for Animals and many others conducting and, very bravely putting online. And I think that's a testament to, why undercover investigations and seeing that kind of footage is so important, because I think without it, I probably would not have known the conditions in which animals are forced to live in the food system.
You spoke earlier about the advantages of a plant-based diet. Tell us about that.
Eating a plant-based diet, it has been shown through a very large body of research to have a lower correlation with a large number of non-communicable diseases, certain cancers, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, et cetera. Looking at, sort of the health benefits of a plant-based diet, we can see that plant-based diets are nutritionally complete. They contain, very adequate levels of things like protein, calcium, all manner of vitamins and minerals. They also tend to be, you know, much higher in fiber than diets that are very heavy in meat and dairy, and also free from a lot of the unhealthy fats that you can sometimes see in things like dairy and processed meats, etc. So a well-balanced, you know, plant-based diet is an amazing way for folks to improve their health. And of course, you know, really at the root of it, I think many of us, myself included, I came to it from this lens of being sort of interested from a health perspective. But I think what really has led to that longevity in a plant-based diet is understanding more holistically, this is something that is not just healthy for myself and my body, but also the environment, looking at the environmental impacts of the meat and dairy sector, and also understanding, of course, the impact to individual animals who are used in the food system. So I think for all those reasons, you know, it's really led to lasting change in having a plant-based diet now for many years.
Right. Yeah. And can you talk a little more about the environmental impact of a meat-based diet?
Yeah, of course. I mean, animal agriculture alone is responsible for almost 15% of all human-caused global greenhouse gas emissions. And that's more than all of the direct emissions from things like cars, planes, and ships combined, which is really massive when you think about it. So reducing the amount of meat that individuals purchase, certainly that institutions and governments purchase, even modestly, can have a really significant impact on reducing our carbon footprints. You know, I think raising animals for food is a really inefficient exercise when you think about it. At the end of the day, raising animals for something like beef or pork requires massive amounts of inputs in the form of land, water, crops that are grown as feed crops to feed those animals. You know, there's this concept of a calorie conversion ratio. So in other words, you feed a certain amount of calories to a cow in order to yield just one calorie of outputs. And it's very inefficient. You're losing a lot of inputs, you're losing a lot of resources by cycling calories through animals. So just as an example, 1 pound of beef requires around 1,800 gallons of water to produce, which is massive. And so that's not just water that the animal is drinking, that's all of the water that is being used to water the crops that are then grown to feed the animal. So you're losing a lot of efficiency in that process. 1 pound of tofu requires only about 300 gallons of water. So that's about 6 times less water to create a pound of tofu. So shifting menus to be more plant-based is really another wonderful way to help conserve some of these water resources. And I think when we look at the future, we can see that shifting towards more plant-based diets is going to be absolutely critical to feeding a growing global population. Our planet cannot support 10 billion, you know, estimated 10 billion very heavy meat eaters in the coming decades. So shifting towards more plant-based proteins is really a long-term climate solution and something that is going to be really necessary for societies to contend with as we move towards larger populations. Another really interesting stat that I find very compelling is, you know, currently we use about 80% of all agricultural land in the world to produce animal products, but animal products only yield around 37% of our global protein supply and around 18% of calories. So again, really inefficient. 80% of land, less than 40% of our global protein, less than 20% of our global calories. We're already relying very heavily on plant-based crops and proteins to feed our global population.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan, here today with Jennifer Baer, Director of Plant-Based Initiatives at Mercy for Animals. And one of the things that you do is work with large organizations, as you said, like the food service provider to U.S. national parks, which is where millions of people go each year and there's numerous restaurants. What was your purpose in working with them and what was the result?
So referring to Zantera, which, as you mentioned, is one of the main food service providers to many of the most iconic U.S. national parks. Really, the sort of impetus behind reaching out to Zentera was recognizing this amazing opportunity that the company had to be a leader in this sector on sustainability by virtue of their involvement with national parks. You know, the national park system, of course, is beloved by so many Americans, millions of Americans who visit the parks each year to take in the beauty of nature and wildlife and our ecosystems. And, you know, it's very foundational for, you know, inspiring future generations of conservation and respect for the environment here in the U.S. And so Zentera, being one of the primary food service providers, is in a really unique and wonderful position to lead from a place of sustainability. And of course, that is included in the food that they serve. So that's really what prompted Mercy for Animals to reach out to Zentera and to, you know, initiate this dialogue about how plant-based menus can be included in a more holistic sustainability plan. And so after, you know, some time of dialogue and conversation with the company, we were so thrilled to see them make this amazing policy commitment to making 50% of its menu entrees plant-based by 2026. And I think this is very reflective of a growing shift that we've seen towards menus that are not only more sustainable, but also more inclusive in some of, you know, the largest restaurants and institutions in the U.S. And when I talk about inclusivity, you know, of course, it's wonderful that folks who eat plant-based diets have more options, but it's also much bigger than that. Plant-based menus are much more inclusive to folks from different cultural and religious backgrounds, but also for the millions of Americans who have dietary restrictions, for example, lactose intolerance, which is hugely common, you know, particularly amongst children who may be traveling with families to some of these beautiful national parks.
A 50% commitment to plant-based meals is major. What do the food service companies see as their incentive?
But, you know, we've seen, for example, how younger consumers, millennials and Gen Z, are hugely drawn to plant-based menus. It's just much more common amongst younger generations to be pursuing those kinds of eating patterns. And so for companies and businesses who are looking to appeal to a younger audience, to appeal to a broader audience, we're able to really show data demonstrating that that's something that's going to be beneficial to them. There's also cost implications, which, you know, may be surprising to hear for certain folks who are listening, but there is a growing collection of case studies and real life examples showing that how transitions to being more plant forward can actually be beneficial from a revenue and a cost saving perspective. So I think an amazing example comes from the city of New York for their New York City Health and Hospitals food service program. Within those healthcare institutions, they implemented some very plant forward policies in the ways that they were serving their food. And they saw a 59-cent reduction per meal in the meals that they were serving, which of course 59 cents may not sound like a lot, but you multiply that by thousands of meals, you know, per week, week after week, in and out, and you really start to see how this can be a huge driver for a business to save. And we've seen other examples coming from school systems of cost savings and so on and so forth. So I think when we really lay out all of those arguments and really, again, show companies and institutions how plant-based menus can support their pre-existing business goals.
And you work with companies that provide food services to schools?
That's correct. So we work primarily with food service institutions that then in turn work with school systems and hospitals. So as an example, you may have seen, we recently saw an amazing policy come from SLA Management, which is one of these large food service companies that works primarily in the K-12 school systems, working to commit to having 1/3 of their menu offerings be plant-based by 2027. This is going to impact, you know, many millions of meals and really show the next generation of this country that plant-based options can be delicious and nutritious. And again, going back to that concept of normalization, you know, changing it so that, you know, we don't have this concept in our mind of, you know, a meal can't be filling without having meat or dairy. You know, it's really showing folks like, look, these menu options can be delicious and nutritionally complete and filling, and just, you know, remove the animal products and replace them with plant-based proteins instead. So, yeah, that's a big part of our work. You know, we really try to focus our efforts on where we can do the most good and where we can have the largest impact. And working with large scale food service management companies is a big part of that. We're actually running a campaign right now that I can tell you a little bit about, just because it's, you know, directly related to our conversation around food service. We are working to try to see a similar policy come from the fourth largest food service management company in the United States, which is Delaware North. Delaware North is a food service company that is absolutely massive. They have more than 200 venues across the world, primarily in places like sporting arenas, event venues, resorts, some airports, as well as some restaurants. And we're really hoping to see a similar policy coming from them, that they should commit to making a certain percentage of their menu plant-based.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan, here today with Jennifer Baer. She's Director of Plant-Based Initiatives at Mercy for Animals. You said earlier that one of the things that moved you to a plant-based diet was the treatment of the animals that are used for food. Is it fair to say that that issue is also vital to Mercy for Animals?
Sharing that message, keeping animals central to our message, is really important for Mercy for Animals. We have done many, many undercover investigations into factory farms and slaughterhouses, and are extremely dedicated to sharing that footage with the public so that people can know the reality of what happens before those eggs get to the grocery store, before that hamburger gets on your plate from the fast food restaurant. I think really revealing the reality of what happens is extremely important to MFA. You know, our strategy is really focused on, I'll say, three main pillars. So one would be reducing large-scale suffering where animals are trapped in the food system. So that would mean, you know, working to improve the conditions and really fighting tirelessly for improved conditions for animals who are still trapped in the food system, and lessening their suffering to the extent that it's possible. The second sort of pillar, I would say, involves building support and changing narratives around, you know, the fact that animals are individuals and not things, changing narratives around the food system, changing narratives in the sense of, you know, looking at our food system and saying, this is not a food system that's working for the vast majority of people. We need to improve things. And I think that, you know, to your point, you know, that sort of conversation around, well, this is actually what happens on farms and slaughterhouses, and really making sure that individuals are aware of that and making that connection is really important. And then, of course, the third category, the third pillar there, is focused on normalizing plant-based eating and really driving lasting change in these systems and institutions throughout the food sector. Just for example, zoonotic diseases, avian flu. In the past 2 to 3 years, we have seen this sort of ongoing wave of avian influenza in the United States and also globally, that has brought the price of eggs up and down, sometimes reaching more than 200% of where the price currently sits, which is not only hugely detrimental for individual households, individuals just looking to shop at the grocery store, but also for businesses and business owners who are trying to run a restaurant and finding the price of their inputs going up 200%. And of course, you know, avian flu is in many ways a product of the factory farming system, where we have close, intense confinement. And so, you know, we're really trying to speak out about that with companies and showing them, look, having plant-based proteins, you know, being less reliant on meat and dairy exclusively is in many ways a risk reduction measure. And also, of course, for companies that have sustainability plans, that have, you know, very clear set, you know, sort of net zero goals or carbon footprint reduction goals, plant-based proteins really marry seamlessly with those kinds of initiatives. And I think for individuals, you know, sharing information, really sharing the message that animals are not things, they're not commodities, they are themselves individuals and should be treated with respect. There's this pastoral, maybe nostalgic view of, you know, what is a farm? Is it a big open pasture with like happy chickens and happy cows and a red and white barn? And that's simply not the reality for really anyone. It's not the reality for the animals, certainly having a big open field. And it's also not the reality for the workers. You know, these workers who are in factory farms and slaughterhouses, particularly in slaughterhouses and processing facilities, are really themselves very exploited. It's a job working in a processing facility that has one of the highest turnover rates of any profession. It can be extremely dangerous. There's very high rates of workplace injuries. And, you know, the system is set up in a way that the workers and the farmers themselves are not really benefiting a fraction of the amount that, you know, really the companies, the corporations that control the food industry are really the ones who ultimately benefit from these systems. And so, yes, that's a huge part of the reality of what goes into animal agriculture.
What do you see as the role of popular culture, such as media, advertising, in determining the foods we choose to eat?
The answer probably varies depending on who you ask. I mean, I think we all are familiar with the role that the media and advertisements play in terms of just being hugely influential and impactful in, driving consumer interest in products and trends. I think the sort of playing field has shifted dramatically in recent years, in part because of social media, where, you know, I think previously it was primarily TV commercials back when folks used to watch TV with commercials. I think going back to what I was saying earlier, younger generations, you know, are primarily watching their content through streaming services and also social media. So I think that's kind of the next frontier for, advertisers, marketing teams, and, media entities to try to influence what folks are eating and consuming. But I also think that there is sort of a flip side to that, which is that social media has given a platform to many organizations like Mercy for Animals, where we are able to get our message out there as well. And we're able to provide, you know, context for, you know, not only information about why plant-based eating is better for animals, the environment, but also information about, you know, look, there's this plant-based recipe that's easy to make and it has, you know, 15 grams of protein, et cetera. And you can make it in 20 minutes using things you probably already have in your house. We're able to put out information about our undercover investigations on social media. We're able to share information about restaurants that have just launched new vegan menu offerings. And so I think it's a different, very different playing field compared to what it used to be in terms of, you know, media influence. But I'd say, you know, one upside to social media is definitely that it allows us to connect so directly with our audience, with our supporters, with people who care about these issues, and really share information directly with them, which is just phenomenal. But yeah, there is a huge sort of conversation around, you know, what is the role of, you know, marketing departments and influencers. I think that's probably the new iteration of commercials is, you know, not necessarily a commercial you see during a television ad break, but, you know, influencers and what influencers are messaging to their audience. So it's just a whole other world compared to what it was just perhaps a few short years ago.
Do you think we're going to see a plant-based food chain to rival the fast food giants?
We're definitively not far off from the day when we see plant-based proteins really stepping into the mainstream. In many ways, it's happening. It is that, you know, that is the direction that the world is moving. Plant-based foods, plant-based proteins are the future of food. I think an amazing example of this would be within the sort of coffee chain style of eatery, which, as coffee chains are absolutely massive. Starbucks has over 16,000 locations just in the U.S. alone. Dunkin' Donuts, I believe, has somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 locations in the U.S. So these are massive, massive corporate entities, and both companies made the amazing decision to stop charging an extra fee for plant-based milk just in the last 12 months or so. And they regularly feature things like oat milk in their seasonal and promotional launches, which is exposing, many millions of customers to these kinds of, non-dairy milks that maybe otherwise, perhaps otherwise they wouldn't be exposed to that. So I think that it's a shift that is already happening and that we'll continue to see happen in the mainstream.
What do you see as barriers to behavioral changes regarding food choices?
Food-centered, and usually, stereotypically, that food is an animal product. The 4th of July, it's hamburgers and hot dogs. On Christmas, maybe it's roast. On Thanksgiving, it's turkey. And of course, there's so many issues with sort of all of those topics. But we see that there is this sort of inherent element of to your you said it perfectly, behavior. And I think that it's a lot of there's a lot that we can do when we look at public narratives to really just present the reality of what the food system looks like for animals who are in it. I think that is really important because I think without that information, it's difficult for individuals to know that there's even a problem. I think knowing that there is a problem in the food system is step one. And in fact, this is something where I think there's reason for optimism. The vast majority of folks that you ask about factory farming are strongly opposed to factory farming. People know that factory farming, that concept, that phrase is negative. They know that there are food there is an aspect of the food system that is detrimental to animals, detrimental to the environment, and detrimental to human health. And then I think the next sort of portion of that is, well, what's the better alternative? What is the option that is out there if not this sort of industrialized animal agriculture? And that's where plant-based procurement strategies can really shine. And we can sort of present this alternative to decision makers in the food system to say, look, these solutions are out there. They're cost effective, they're more sustainable, and perhaps most importantly, they're delicious. There is nothing being sacrificed in terms of the deliciousness, the texture, the flavor profile. Plant-based diets are, not only nutritionally complete, they're absolutely amazing from a flavor and a taste perspective. And so I think it's a combination of those two things, of awareness of the problem and then also presenting the better alternative that has been a winning solution with many of the institutions that we've worked with, as well as individuals. I think it comes down to, taste. As long as the food is delicious and amazing, and flavorful, then people are going to gravitate towards it naturally.
That's all for now. Thanks to our guest, Jennifer Baer, Director of Plant-Based Initiatives at Mercy for Animals, and thanks so much to you for listening. Our website is mothering-earth.com. Until next time, this is Salwa Khan signing off for Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. The views and opinions expressed on Mothering Earth do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of this station.